from the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be in whatever time zone you reside in. So many of them out there, and every single one of them covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM Weekend Version. I'm Art Bell, and honored to be here with you through the weekend for whatever develops, and it will be one of those kinds of weekends. For this hour is devoted entirely to open screened, unlined, no net phone calls. We just pick it up and do it. So numbers are a little different on the weekend. You might recall your list if you have one, and if not, wait for the bottom of the hour and we'll spew the numbers forth. Well, what an incredible week it has been for Ramona and myself. We took off for New York City last weekend, and of course I wasn't here, as you know. We took off for New York City, and on Monday at the New York Museum of Natural History, we went to the screen debut, the premiere of The Day After Tomorrow, which, as you know, is a movie ripping them up out there, I might add. I saw something indicating it's projecting $100 million weekend. $100 million weekend. Can you imagine that? Anyway, we got to go, and it was really cool at the Museum of Natural History. Outside, they had snow coming down. It was incredible. I mean, they had a machine making snow so that all the reporters there and all the dignitaries, you know, New York City politicians and the stars of the movie, and everybody would get snowed on whilst they waited outside. It was very effective. And I took a photo. Well, actually, Ramona took a photograph waiting to get in. Guess who I should be next to? But one of the stars of the movie, Jake Gyllenhaal. And so you'll see me with Jake. If you have seen the movie, then you will instantly recognize his face, or you may from elsewhere, I don't know. But that's on my webcam tonight. If you go to www.coasttocoastam.com, in the upper left-hand corner, it'll say Art's Webcam. Click on that. And if you look carefully, you'll see some little flakes of, well, not snow, what was meant to be snow, and it certainly looked like it. I actually don't know what it was. It may have been some sort of polymer or some, I don't know. I have no idea what it was, but it was very effectively, it was certainly kind of like snow, whatever it was. And it was coming down on all of us. And then, of course, we all marched inside and went to the premiere. And oh my God. I told you that if you had seen 10.5 on television about the earthquake, this would make that look like a Sunday picnic, and it absolutely did. This is a motion picture, and of course, I'm not going to give away the plot, but it is a motion picture that grabs you by the vitals the moment it begins, and you're on a roller coaster ride. And what a ride it is. Oh, the special effects in this movie are incredible. Incredible. And by the way, be sure and stay to the very end. You know, when everybody else begins to get up and walk out of the theater because the credits are rolling, stick around. Because in the credits, you will see somewhere down there, inspired in part by the book, The Coming Global Superstorm by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber, you'll see that in the end credits. So there you have it. It was a really indescribably odd experience to go to the premiere of a movie based, you know, in part on a book you wrote. It really was. It was nerve-wracking and fun and exciting and adrenaline rushing, and you can't even imagine. So my perspective, no doubt, is very different than others, but I just loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I'm enjoying hearing by email what you all thought of it. And I certainly am getting emails, no question about that, tons and tons of emails. So if you have a comment on the motion picture, it's going to be raging through the weekend. That's already a fact. and perhaps weekends to come. And then ultimately you'll get an opportunity to get it on DVD, no doubt. All right, well, if you'd like to send me an email, comment on it, you're welcome to. I would be Art Bell, that's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com, or artbell at AOL.com, all strung together, lowercase, of course. Take a look at that picture, it's kind of cool, with Jake. All right, this is from a scientist, a fellow named Monty J. Edwards II, who says, "Dear Art, I am a scientist, physical chemistry at Marshall University, and recently read your book, The Coming Global Superstorm. I wanted to inform you how much of an impact this book has had on my view of atmospheric chemistry in the last week. I found it insightful, concise, but more importantly, very powerful. It is unfortunate that more mainstream scientists are willing to look in the opposite direction on this issue. Our very survival as a species is depending on a solution. I only wish that I would have read the book earlier. Thank you for excellence in broadcasting. Keep up the good work. Monty J. Edwards II." So there you have it. The motion picture based on that book, raging through this weekend. You can see it at a local theater. God, the special effects, just incredible. In a moment, we'll review some of the rest of the world. You ever wonder about the news? I do a lot. I wonder about it. I mean, I'm about to read you and sort of skim through the headlines with you a little bit, but it's never good. The news is never good. Has that ever occurred to you? Surely there must be good things that happen out there, right? But they don't get in the news. The news is always 100% assuredly bad. Now, why is that? Why is really good news not newsworthy, but really bad news? In fact, the worse it gets, the better, right? Is it something about if it bleeds, it leads? Well, it leads. Gunman killed 10 in Saudi housing compound. It's typical, right? Is suspected Islamic militants wearing military-style uniforms sprayed gunfire inside two office compounds in the heart of the Saudi oil region Saturday, killing at least 10, including, by the way, an American. Let's see. Intelligence agents encouraged abuse. Well, now, it's beginning to look as if it was not just a few isolated incidents of guards gone wild or something like that. Huh? It looks as though this does indeed go up the chain, much as they may have tried to prevent that from occurring. Now the news is showing clearly that it does go up the chain. Several U.S. guards allege they witnessed military intelligence operatives encouraging the abuse of Iraqi prison inmates at four prisons other than the now most infamous prison. Court transcripts and Army investigator interviews provide the broadest view of evidence that abuses from forcing inmates to stand in 120-degree heat while in hoods to punching them occurred at a Marine detention camp and three Army prison sites. So you see, this is spreading and sounding an awful lot more like policy than random acts. America dedicated a memorial Saturday to the now fast-thinning ranks of World War II vets, a poignant last hurrah drawing together tens of thousands of old soldiers, sailors, and heroes of the home front. Frail now, full of spunk then, they were thanked for the service that helped save our world. And I guess you could say the world. Pat Tillman, you recall Pat Tillman, right? The U.S. soldier who turned down $3.5 million to play for the Arizona Cardinals, went into the Army instead, who was killed, we now have learned, was most likely killed by friendly fire. You know, the whole thing occurred during an ambush, and of course, everybody is looking everywhere. There's no single direction for your attention and your fire, and so friendly fire incidents do occur frequently in an ambush situation. Four members of the American Special Forces were killed in action in southern Afghanistan in the war on terror, so that continues. Maybe this is good news. I don't know. It's the only piece I could find that was even close to it. Pretty cool. Call it the moneymaker effect. For the second straight year, an internet unknown has won the famed World Series of Poker. It occurred Friday, ravaging a field of professional players on his way to glory and riches. Greg Frosselman Raymeyer, a patent lawyer from Stonington, Connecticut, earned a spot in the 35th annual No Limit Texas Hold'em event after winning a $150 satellite tournament on PokerStars.com. So, in other words, guy went online, put up $150, ended up winning millions of dollars in a poker tournament. Now, my wife and I have become devotees of watching these poker tournaments on TV on the Travel Channel. They're very popular and fun to watch. And the one thing that we have noted, and you know, when I had Amarillo Slim, a very famous, world-famous poker player on the program, I asked him why no women ever make it to the final table in all these poker tournaments. Never do you see a woman. They get close, but they don't make it. And I asked him why, and he thought I was setting him up or something, so he didn't answer the question. He went around that question 5,000 ways and then just flat wouldn't answer. So I'm asking all of you, what is it that has prevented a woman from making the finals? It is one of the deepest mysteries right now known to mankind. And we have puzzled about this. Is it that a woman has tells on her face? That a woman cannot keep to herself the emotional moment, the critical moment in a poker game when you turn up the cards and you see a couple of aces? Or the moment where you know you're beat, but you're going to bluff the hell out of the other guy and blow him into next Tuesday. What is it about a woman that has prevented her from making it to any of the finals? Now, we've watched many, many, many of these, and there's something special here. Even Amarillo Slim wouldn't answer that question. Why not a woman? Back to a little weather news. The headline is, jet stream jump could usher unseasonably hot summer. Lately, Oklahoma weather has been unusually quiet for the month of May. Summertime pattern has established itself over the central plains, redirecting the stormy weather north of Oklahoma. This is written by somebody in Oklahoma. He goes on, what do I mean by a summertime pattern? Well, simply put, it has to do with the jet stream. The jet stream is a rapidly flowing content of air about 30,000 feet up that steers the major storm systems across America. Where the jet stream goes, so go these storms. For the past couple of weeks, the jet stream has been instead across the northern plains, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri. This pattern has left Oklahoma City high and dry. The reason to raise an eyebrow this May is that it appears the jet stream simply jumped northward into a late summer pattern instead of what it usually does. One can only guess what the summer has in store with this kind of a setup, and that from Oklahoma. It's true, if you look at the map, the severe storms have jumped from where they normally are down in what we call Tornado Alley, up into the northern part of the U.S., just one more weather anomaly underway right now. Here's an interesting CNN report. Rapid Arctic thaw portends warming. A global warming is hitting the Arctic more than twice as fast as the rest of our planet in what also may be a portent of wider catastrophic changes, according to the chairman of an eight-nation study on Monday. Quote, there is dramatic climate change happening in the Arctic now, about 2 to 3 times the pace of the rest of the globe, according to Robert Corwell, chairman of the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment, in an 1,800-page report, that's a big one to be handed to the ministers in Iceland in November, that melting, listen to me now, is destabilizing buildings on permafrost, threatening an oil pipeline laid across Alaska, that very expensive Alaska pipeline, you know the one, right? Inuit hunters are reportedly falling more frequently, falling through the thinning ice, and the habitats for plants and animals have been disrupted. The benefits for human commerce might accrue because you might see an opening now of largely icebound short sea cuts. You know, a new route from the Pacific to the Atlantic. Russia might also win easier access to oil and gas as the ice cap shrinks and permafrost retreats. But this generally is not good news. Just not good news at all. The Arctic reacts mostly to global warming, blamed largely on emissions of gases like carbon dioxide, fossil fuels in cars and factories, partly because dark-covered water or earth once exposed soaks up heat far faster than white ice or snow. If you want to know what the rest of the planet is going to see in the next generation, watch out for the Arctic in the next 5 to 10 years, they say. It's changing just altogether too quickly now. They just discovered, now my guest tonight is going to be very interested in this. He's talking about a new ice age, and lo and behold, they have discovered an underwater volcano off of all places, Antarctica. A previously unknown underwater volcano has now been discovered off the coast of Antarctica, according to the National Science Foundation. The findings help explain mariners' historical reports of discolored water in the area. That's what happens. The water becomes discolored, and they, of course, had no idea what that meant. What it really means is there's a volcano under there. The presence of a volcano was first suggested in sonar studies during a research cruise in January, but scientists were unable to return to the stormy waters of that region until April. They said the research vessel, Lawrence M. Gould, was returning from a study of a collapsed ice shelf when it passed right over the volcano. So that's pretty incredible stuff. Certainly a pretty incredible place, you would think, for a volcano. You would also think a volcano would begin to melt the ice, wouldn't you? And then finally, and I guess this goes with the weekend and the whole sort of thing we're doing right now, on the weekend of the opening of the day after tomorrow, researcher James Lovelock says that climate change may be proceeding much more quickly than previously thought. This report comes at a time when the main criticism of the film is that why everything happens much faster than it would in reality. Well, of course, it's a, you know, 2-hour movie. You've got to fit it in there. Anyway, in the Independent, Michael McCarthy writes that Lovelock's conclusion is due to two recent climate events, the increasingly rapid melting of the Arctic ice sheet covering Greenland, which is, by the way, going to raise global sea levels, and the extreme heat wave in Europe last summer, which caused 20,000 deaths of mostly elderly people in France. There's no question in any reasonable scientist's mind that the heat wave was the first really bad event of global warming, says Lovelock, but the media picked it up only as a story about the wickedness of the French in not looking after their own old people. He's just as alarmed about the Greenland ice sheet, which is melting far faster than expected. Quote, I think in the past we thought more in terms of it would get hotter, things would change, you might be able to grow Mediterranean plants in Britain, stuff like that. It didn't seem all that bad. You knew there'd be some places it wouldn't be fine, but others, well, might be nicer than they were. Now, there's a growing awareness that global warming is far more serious than we ever realized, that it is proceeding more quickly, that it poses a threat to future generations and even to civilization itself. So there you have it. That's, of course, what I've been huffing and puffing about for a very long time now. Oh, incidentally, one more item. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry says, should he be elected, he will put a stop to the nuclear waste dump at Yucca Mountain. Now, the reporter involved in this story that did it for Channel 8 in Las Vegas pressed Senator Kerry, and he was good to his word. He said, if elected, I will do everything within my power and the law to stop it. And so if they don't put it at Yucca, I wonder where they are going to put it. Anyway, coming up in a moment, 30 minutes of open lines just ahead of tonight's guest from the high desert in the middle of the night. I'm Art Bell.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Couple of quick notes, everybody. Tomorrow night, open lines, start to finish. The whole thing is going to be open lines tomorrow night, so if you have any suggestions about special lines, let's say, that you would like to see us entertain the possibility of, then email me. Suggest it between now and tomorrow, and I will take your suggestion, perhaps, to heart. You never know. ArtBell at Mindspring.com or ArtBell at AOL.com. And there are a couple of other things here. Well, granted, we stayed at a fairly prestigious hotel in Manhattan. However, here in Little Pahrump, Nevada, when you go and you get, say, a breakfast in the morning, you get a couple of eggs, toast, you know, the usual, right? Some orange juice, maybe, and sausage, and that's it. Little cup of coffee, say. You know, it might be a couple of people here. It's a very reasonable place we live in. A couple of people might be about $6. Maybe. Unless you hit a special, then it might be all of $2 or $3. Well, we had exactly that breakfast at a hotel in Manhattan. Two eggs, a couple hunks of toast, some sausage, and, you know. Anyway, the bill was $50. $50. Now, that's culture shock. I'll tell you what. Couple of eggs for two people, $50. Holy smokes. Now, they did have, I'll grant them, a very good $16 burger. It was delicious, but $50 for a couple of eggs. Holy moly. Absolutely, if you were going to live in Manhattan, you'd have to be making a lot of money. You know, going back just a little bit in the program, I reiterate my wonderment at the lack of any good news in the news. Good news never gets, or with very rare exceptions, never gets printed. Why would you think that would be? I mean, surely in the world there would be a nearly equal mixture of good news and bad news, right? And yet bad news absolutely dominates. Moreover, that is what people want to hear. Otherwise, there would be good news on the radio and on television, in the media in general. There would be good news. People would go, they just want to hear the bad news. What is it about human nature that makes people want to hear the bad news? And speaking of it, and the weather, William at Continental Divide, Colorado writes, tornadoes, in fact, tornado news is preempting your program right now in parts of Kansas, Colorado, Nebraska. Having to use a Sea Crane radio to hear you right now on KSTP since we can't pick up any local radio stations within 400 to 800 miles. Wow. So that jet stream indeed has shifted north with it, and the tornadoes and violent storms have shifted along with it. So they are north now, and they are really vicious this year. As we flew toward New York City, for just about the entire flight, I was on the left-hand side of the airplane, able to look north, and all we could see were these incredible thunderheads built, God knows how many, just barely below us. You know, we were just barely, kind of over the top of them, and unrelenting lightning, just watching the vicious weather across the central part of the U.S., and, of course, the report of tornadoes. But the day following our flight east was horrible. So, the weather. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
This is Ann in Walnut Creek in Contra Costa County. I just wanted to congratulate you and Whitley Strieber. I mean, it's obvious from the reviews that I've read and that I've heard on the radio, including Terry Gross of Fresh Air on NPR, and she's just the creme de la creme. She's wonderful. That, you know, people are looking at the movie that was made from your book as being a very complex, multi-level movie and experience, and setting a lot of people to thinking, and you're getting there's some controversy among environmentalists, and you're getting some favorable comments from environmentalists. So I think you're accomplishing some of your goal.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I really hope so. If, you know, it's obviously entertainment at its best. I mean, the American public loves that kind of thing. The world's public loves it. The movie opened worldwide, by the way, not just in the U.S.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm getting a million emails, and people love it. Now, the reviewers, of course, tend to go to scientists who tend to say, ow, this could never happen, you know, that kind of thing. But I do think it's causing millions and millions of people to think, well, hey, maybe it could be.
Right.
It's a science fiction movie, although it's based on enough of a nugget of reality that if you don't come out of that theater thinking about what's going on in our world right now, you weren't paying attention.
Right. And there are some science fiction movies in our heritage that were made years ago that people are still thinking and talking about.
It is a wonderful predictor of the real future.
Right.
It always has been.
Right. So good for you. And I can't wait to see it.
All right. Well, you'll enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And take care. Yes. Science fiction has always had a way, and I think the reason for that is because the really good science fiction writers, in my opinion, build their story, fiction as it may be, against a nugget of reality. And so, more frequently than not, as years pass, that nugget of reality at that earlier time proves out to be scientifically viable and is something that is developed or something that occurs if prognosticated. That's why so many times science fiction movies become science reality. On the first time caller line, you have arrived. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to discuss something that you brought up a little while ago about Yellowstone. They had this on the science channel tonight.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
They were explaining exactly what was going to happen if it did go.
Yes.
They said it would kill tens of thousands of people.
Yes, the American public doesn't understand this caldera. It just, it would be such a massive explosion that the entire Southwest would be reeling.
Well, with the earthquake about to hit, I think a lot of people now are beginning to wonder if this is not going to happen. And we're living in the last days, and God told us, Jesus told us this was going to happen.
We are riders on the storm.
Yeah, and like this movie you're talking about, how the water came into New York.
Yes.
Well, if this asteroid hits like it's supposed to, that's why it's going to happen.
I would do the same thing, yes.
Yeah, they said that Florida would go underwater. The whole East Coast would be affected because it's going to come in on the east side of the United States.
Well, it could very well occur. Thank you very much. There could be also an earthquake mid-Atlantic. They discovered that. There are any number of things that could cause tidal waves that would do roughly to New York what you saw done or will see done yet in the day after tomorrow. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm Paul from Columbia. 30 years.
Columbia what, South Carolina?
Columbia, South Carolina.
All right, Paul, go ahead.
Well, 30 years ago, I dreamed about buildings falling down in New York City. And then 9-1-1 happened, 5 buildings fell down. 30 years ago, also, I dreamed about a tidal wave hitting New York City and that it froze and became a solid sheet of ice. And so I saw previews of the movie. I haven't seen the movie yet, where it shows New York freezing over. And then the movie trailers, it shows tornadoes. And every time I dream about tornadoes, they happen. Like April 19th, I dreamed about 3 tornadoes and 40 of them hit Illinois. So I don't think it's science. I don't think it's science fiction. I think the movie's more science.
Well, have you ever thought of the following possibility? Maybe you're doing it. Maybe you're making this happen. Maybe it's you. Like with the Krell in Forbidden Planet, where those meters keep going up and you're using endless amounts of power to turn your imagination into horrible reality, sir. I appreciate your call.
Thank you, sir.
Right, take care. The monster of the id. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
Dave in Shepherdsville, Kentucky, listening on WHAS.
Yes, sir.
I was calling just because I was going to say I believe that we're living in the end times. I believe the world's going to end.
Do you? You take the biblical version, I take it.
Yes, I do. I do believe that Jesus Christ will ultimately prevail, but I believe that the dark church is coming out a lot faster and in more unison than perhaps, let's say, the Christian church does. Because they all seem to be divided, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Methodist.
So you think this is it, eh?
Oh, I do believe that we're living in the end times.
You think the horns are going to blow soon? The galloping hooves?
Yeah, I just hope the rapture will save us all.
Well, not all of us. I mean, that's the thing about the rapture, right?
Well,
it only its brothers.
So
the rapture is selective. It's just going to take the Christians while everybody else is left around going, huh?
Yeah, but the Christians is...
See, I've got a little bit of a problem with that, you know, that just the Christians are going to go up.
I believe it's more than, well, it says that the gospel will have to be preached in the whole world before the end can come.
So, in other words, everybody will be given their choice.
That's what the Bible does, per se. And, the word rapture is not actually even in the Bible.
That's right.
More of an interpretation by the church.
Yes, right. Yeah, exactly right. And the whole concept of it just has always seemed not quite right to me. Now, if everybody got the word, I suppose that would be, I don't know. Would that be fair? There are some who just would not believe the word were it laid down right in front of them. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Jim from Yuma, Arizona.
Hello, Jim.
How you doing tonight?
Just spiffy. Turn your radio off, Jim.
Okay.
That's very important. Otherwise, you'll get confused, or I will. All right, so what's up?
Well, partner, I've been listening to you for about, almost 8 years now.
Long time.
Yep, my son turned me on to you because he used to drive at night while I was in the sleeper sleeping.
Oh, yes. Father-son driving team.
Yes, sir, we were for a while.
Okay.
I had to get off the road because I had a little bit of cancer I had to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, twice I have seen your triangle.
Oh, yes.
Once over Yuma, Arizona, and once near 29 Palms.
Yeah, well, it's not my triangle. You refer to the sighting that I had. What I saw, and I guess what you saw, clearly were not a conventional aircraft. That doesn't mean that they are not ours somehow or another, but if we really are making something like that, then we're really much more ahead of the game than we thought, because, gee, it defied gravity. It had control of gravity. That it wasn't flying.
Well, it was just as quiet as could be. We couldn't hear a thing.
There you are.
Yeah. But what I called about was your movie.
Uh-oh.
Went down and saw it last night.
Oh, yes.
And it was really good. I was a little, little disappointed that it didn't go into more detail.
Well, of course, you have 2 hours to document, you know, the end of part of the world here. So you only can chalk so much detail into it, but what a roller coaster ride.
Oh, yes. I'm getting I tell you what, after those prices you quoted a little bit ago up there in New York City, maybe they need that Superstorm's eye to go over there. Hey, partner, you have a good night, and we'll just keep listening.
All right, take care. Yeah, wipe out those overzealous capitalists in New York, huh? Oh, my. It's still, the city is electrifying. You know, maybe I'll put up some shots after a while of the skyline that we took from our room. It is incredible. But imagine that, eating, you know, just a couple of eggs, a couple pieces of toast, a couple sausages, and $50 for breakfast. Whoa. On our international line, you're on the air. Hello.
Me?
You.
Ooh, hi.
Ooh,
congratulations.
Hi.
I haven't seen the film yet. I've seen trailers, but it's such an important message. So well done.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be dragging a bunch of people with me, and they think they're going just for the special effects, but they don't know about the lecture afterwards.
Well, the special effects are beyond compare. There's been nothing ever done like this, I assure you.
I must say, though, and did I see things? I saw just on the telly a very quick clip of a huge wave overtaking the Statue of Liberty and on the shore, the Twin Towers.
I don't think you saw a heat wave overtaking it. But, you know, I don't...
Were the Twin Towers still standing?
No, I don't want to give away...
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. Okay, I didn't realize I would be giving something away. Okay.
Yeah, never give away parts of a
movie. Never. Yeah. Never. I don't go to a movie if it started. No, I don't like to know anything, so I apologize. It was a trailer, so I kind of didn't think I...
Yeah, I know. A lot of people... Anyway.
Anyway, what I want to quickly say so you can get on to other callers is... thank you for running the repeat of the broadband power line thing.
Oh, you're very welcome.
It was. I mean, it's not my area of expertise to say the least, but it's so damn important. And I know that what happened in the States when they were doing the 9/11 inquiries with the panel on the second day with Giuliani, that they cut once the family started shouting their protest, because it had gone on for so long and no questions had been asked of Giuliani. And so they cut, and so you didn't find out what happened. And what happened, and I wanted to ask your opinion, they were frustrated, and they're saying, why aren't you asking questions? Why aren't you bringing the whistleblowers in? Why aren't you asking about Motorola? And they kept saying, why aren't you asking about Motorola? And they also were saying that... there were firemen's wives and families. I mean, they didn't have any other agenda. But then they started chanting, they trained and they funded Al-Qaeda. If you
who remember, trained?
Nothing
who,
else, remember
ma'am,
this, and they kept repeating
ma'am,
it.
Ma'am, hold on.
Mm-hmm, sir.
Ma'am, who trained and funded Al-Qaeda?
They were saying, the American government, Giuliani, they were saying, he's not a hero, he's a murderer. Why aren't you asking him? Why aren't you asking him the questions? Where are the whistleblowers? Because the families have worked
okay,
so hard to
I
want to
understand. I do want to understand what you're saying here.
Okay.
Where are the whistleblowers about what?
About 9/11.
What about 9/11? The people who think what?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a whistleblower, but usually whistleblowers are people who have inside information
that
they need protection.
All right. I think that I've got it, and I don't agree with it. I think that at the bottom line there was she was really sort of saying the whistleblowers who are going to say, what, that 9/11 was planned and executed by some secret a government behind the U.S. government? Was that going to be it? Or even the U.S. government standing and elected as is, was that going to be the premise? Well, I'm sorry, I think that is absolutely ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. I don't buy into it for 1 second. Not for 1 second. So blow all the whistles you will, I don't think you'll find that to be the truth. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Turn your radio off, please.
I'm nowhere near the radio.
Okay, good.
This is Robert calling from El Paso.
Okay, Robert.
Sir, I just wanted to let you know I saw the movie today.
Oh,
it
you did?
Excellent. Yes, it was. Well, something I expected happened during the movie, though.
Mm-hmm.
When they were showing the people migrating to Mexico. And
yes.
Now,
wait a minute. You're getting into a part where you're going to give away part of it here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, there was a part in there where people were just, you know, they just started applauding, they started laughing, and I just didn't know.
Well, I certainly understand why they applauded and laughed, and I'm not going to give it away, sir. thank you for the call, but and I realize the urge of those of you who have seen the movie to talk about some of the really incredible parts of it. That's what he was about to do. Maybe when most or the majority of you have seen the movie, then we can talk about parts like that. But until then, really, to give away parts of a really cool movie that you have not yet seen just is a really big, big no-no. And yet, I do understand the urge. Believe me, I do. The Storm. The movie, The Day After Tomorrow. It's playing right now. The Day After Tomorrow is today. But with regard to The Storm, the overall Storm, ladies and gentlemen, we're all on board for this ride. Get your tickets. The conductor is waving. And we're about to take off. And the surfboard is planet Earth from the high desert in the middle of the night. I'm Art Bell.
Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born.
How high will gas prices go this summer?
Be it sight, sound, smell, or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch, or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard. And they use them to help us to fight.
Take a ride. To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. from coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
What's coming up? Robert Felix will be definitely in tune with our topic tonight and the movie itself in a lot of ways. We will turn out to have a lot of agreements and a few disagreements, but what Robert Felix has to say, he wrote a book called Not by Fire, but by Ice. And we'll get to that in a moment. Carl and Janine from Gold Coast, Australia. Yes, the movie opened worldwide. Right, fast blast to say, my wife and I saw Day After Tomorrow down here in Australia. We loved it. Want to see it again? Might even buy the DVD. Great effects, real buzz seeing your name on the big screen. 73s, that means best wishes and ham talk, Carl. In Gold Coast, Australia. Yeah, well, many of you may never experience seeing your name on the big screen, and it was cool. That's what I would say of it. It was kind of cool. I mean, to sit there, even though I had to stand up, you know, it was at the end when everybody was standing up and getting ready to leave as the credits were rolling. I had to stand up, crane my neck a little bit, but there it was. And it is. It is kind of cool. Anyway, coming up, Robert Felix, a former architect who became interested in the Ice Age cycle back in 1991. I originally interviewed him in 97. He spent the next 8.5 years full-time researching and writing about the coming Ice Age. Then he concentrated on spreading the word. Robert's book, Not by Fire, but by Ice, has achieved international acclaim from readers around the world. Today, Felix continues his research and is more firmly convinced than ever that the next Ice Age could begin any day. In fact, he believes it already has begun, coming right up. Well, all right, here we go. Robert Felix, welcome to the program.
Art, I'm glad to be on with you. Thank you.
Last time, 97 with me, eh?
It was, and I think that was just slightly probably before your book came out.
That would be correct, yes.
Congratulations, by the way. That is so great that you are getting the word out about Ice Ages.
We do have this little movie making the rounds this weekend, and it is more or less shaking up the world. So a lot of people are going to be thinking about some of the material you're in the process of presenting. There's no question about that. It's going to wake them up.
Mm-hmm. And there's no question but what an Ice Age is coming, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Well, I've long said, Robert, that to me it doesn't matter whether it's a cyclical event that man's hand can't control or change in the slightest, or whether we're actually having an effect on it, or any of the above. It just doesn't matter. It's, in my opinion, underway now, and so we must begin planning for it now, so that a lot of the things you see unfold in the movie this weekend will not come to pass. Now, I guess in the introduction it said that. It said that from your point of view, no matter how we differ on how it may form, you believe the process is underway now.
I absolutely do believe that. And you know, I won't give away your movie, but in the very beginning it mentions that there was an Ice Age about 10,000 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And a big part of what I say is that Ice Ages do return in a dependable, predictable cycle. It's a natural cycle. And this cycle is not something that I came up with. This cycle was discovered in the 1970s by a group called CLIMAP, Climate Long Range Investigation Mapping and Prediction. And what they did is they looked at deep sea cores for the last 500,000 years, and they discovered that ice ages have begun or ended abruptly, and you talk about abruptly,
yes.
Abruptly, just like clockwork, every 11,500 years.
Now, you said deep-sea cores. Let's talk. We're going to be talking a lot about cores, and I have some evidence that from coring in ice, not under the ocean, but I guess what you're talking about is going to a very deep part of the sea with some sort of robotic apparatus and drilling down and getting a core. Is that correct?
Right. They take deep sea cores into the ocean floor, but also, yeah, later on, I agree with you about the ice cores too.
Well, it's not disputable evidence. I mean, the ice cores are just like, you know, a history book if you know how to read them.
Exactly.
And it does indicate that there have been these, for example, these flash freezes. The most recent evidence, I think, in Peru. And previously, scientists, when they find this sort of thing, Robert, they just sort of, if it doesn't fit in with what they otherwise expect, they just, I don't know, they cast it aside and say it's impossible, and therefore we reject the evidence.
Absolutely, they do. You know, it, I believe that they discovered the speed with, well, there was one lady, Genevieve Wayard, who published in the 1970s that an ice age at the Endymion period began in less than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the knowledge has been around, but everybody laughed at her. Then, and the reason she said that is because in Europe, warm weather trees, according to the pollen record, warm weather trees disappeared in less than 20 years,
mm-hmm.
which everybody poo-pooed. And then in the early 80s, when they were drilling deep cores into the ice in central Greenland, they found more evidence of ice ages beginning abruptly, and that was discarded. But by 1989, they couldn't ignore it any longer. And there was a project called GRIP, Greenland Ice Core Project, that drilled almost 2 miles deep into the ice in central Greenland. And they drilled deep enough that they were able to physically look at the ice that had formed as much as 250,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes along with what you're saying. They discovered that every ice age during the last 250,000 years, and there were many more than they realized, every single one of them began in less than 20 years, sometimes in less than 10 years. Ice ages begin incredibly fast.
Robert, is there any question any longer about global warming? It seems like there's very little question now. All the scientists are agreeing this is occurring. I mean, look at Alaska, for example, where buildings are destabilizing. They were built on permafrost. Well, it's not perma and much frost anymore, and the buildings are destabilizing, and trees are falling down, and I'm telling you, it's getting really, really weird up there. Native Alaskans are falling off or into the ice because it's not frozen enough to hold them anymore. So is there any question about... And then you look at pictures of the North Pole 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and now, and that'll send the hair on the back of your neck straight up. The ice sheets in the Antarctic breaking off, all of that. Is there any question about what's going on in global warming?
Well, that depends on how we define it, Art, because from my research, I do not believe that there is global warming caused by humans.
Okay.
What I see is ocean warming, because I agree that there's ocean warming. However, the temperatures in the atmosphere are declining, temperatures on land are declining, but most of the figures you see, they talk about surface temperatures of the planet are rising. Well, surface temperatures include the ocean, which is 71% of our planet. I think the ocean is heating because of this cycle, and this is a primary contribution that I believe I'm making. I believe that they're heating because of underwater volcanic activity. Now, a little bit earlier, I heard you reading part of that article or discussing part of that article about the underwater volcano found off the Antarctic coast.
That's right.
And, well, that would certainly, and you also mentioned that could make the ice melt, which I think you were doing that a little tongue-in-cheek, but absolutely.
Yeah, of course. Well, of course it could.
Now, that article just came out on May 21st, that newly found volcano. It's interesting. There was another article just last week that I read that Deception Island in Antarctica is that when cruise ships go down there, it's a volcanic crater about 8 miles in diameter that collapsed so that the water is flooded into it and the cruise ships can go in there.
Mm-hmm.
This is off the coast of Antarctica. When the cruise ship goes in there, everybody strips off their jackets, their polar vests, their thermal underwear, their boots and their socks, and they jump into the ocean because Deception is still active. So that's part of
now, that's incredible.
But here's the big one, Art.
That's incredible.
But here's the big one that you don't hear about. In the Arctic Ocean, now I didn't know about this when I wrote the book, but I just discovered this in the last year. In the Arctic Ocean, where we're talking about the ice melting,
yes,
scientists in the last year have discovered the Gakel Ridge. It's a gigantic volcanic mountain chain that stretches beneath the Arctic Ocean. It's something like 1,800 kilometers long. It has deep valleys. It has 5,000-meter high summits. In other words, the mountains, underwater volcanoes are 3 miles high. The Gakel Ridge is far mightier than the Alps, and we have discovered just within the last year that there is surprisingly, and I'll quote here from the article, it was published in the Max Planck Society, surprisingly strong magmatic activity in the west and east of the ridge. It's one of the strongest hydrothermal activities.
Did you say magma or magnetic? Or
magma, magmatic. Magma.
Okay, magnetism. Okay. All right, very good.
Okay, so it's one of the scientists saw one of the strongest hydrothermal activities ever seen at mid-ocean ridges. And this was just published on July 18th of 2003.
Well, I'm sure you've seen the satellite photographs, have you not, of the northern part of the world, and how much ice was there, say, in 91 versus now. Have you seen those?
Yes, and I've had, frankly, I've had a hard time explaining that, because I don't think it's caused by humans. So when I found this article that says that this underwater volcanic chain, which is bigger than the Alps, is active, then all of a sudden, so I can call it global warming, provided we leave out the human cause.
Let's say it's volcanism, both down south and up north.
Uh-huh.
That would be increased volcanism in the last X number, couple of decades or whatever, to cause this massive melting. What would you attribute the sudden increased volcanism?
Okay, I think that has to do with the ice age cycle. And the reason I say that is 11,500 years ago, there was greatly increased volcanic activity, and so much so just before we went into that small ice age, relatively small, but there was drastically increased volcanism. 23,000 years ago, before we went into that disastrous ice age, there was major volcanism. They found mammoth bones interspersed with up to 3 feet of volcanic ash in Alaska. So volcanism on land, the record shows that volcanism on land has in the past increased at the beginning of each ice age. Now, one of the things I said in my book way back when I started researching in 1991,
mm-hmm.
scientists thought there were about 10,000 underwater volcanoes in the entire world. Then in 1993, they discovered 1,100 more underwater volcanoes down off the coast of Easter Island. So in a matter of like 2 months, they increased the world supply of underwater volcanoes by 10%.
Got it.
Now that was then. We know more about the moon than we know about the ocean floor, really, because now, if you go to NASA's website, NASA now estimates that there are as many as 1 million underwater volcanoes. I mean, this is a major change that no one is really exploring yet.
It's the way a planet has of expressing the amount of energy within. Yes.
Yes. Sure.
And there are some that I've interviewed recently, Richard Hoagland and company, who believe that a planet's energy output. That our planet's energy output is now up, and that the other planets in our system exhibit a similar increase in energy. Had you heard that?
I hadn't heard that exactly, but my understanding, I've got one article here, is that some scientists believe that Mars is now coming out of an ice age. And I doubt that there's too many SUVs on Mars.
Well, there is what appears to be global warming going on the planet Mars. No question about it. So
right. I will definitely accept that word but I don't go along with the human cause part of it.
Okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it could be either one or both.
Sure.
And from my point of view at this stage of the game, it doesn't matter, because we need to start recognizing that whatever it is occurring, and we should begin to plan for agriculture in the new setup. Now, here's some place where we're going to agree.
Okay.
And that is the temperature of the oceans. It can indeed cause an ice age, and people are confused about this all the time. They keep saying, well, then, if the oceans get warmer, how the hell could that cause an ice age? It would just be nice to swim in, and so I'm confused. How does a warmer ocean cause an ice age?
Okay, and what happens when you think about El Niños? You know, we had in 1982, we had the worst El Nino on record.
Right.
And then in 1997, we had one that was even worse than that.
That's right.
What El Nino does is that's a warming ocean, essentially, is that the ocean, there's a strip of the ocean down near the equator that warms by up to 14 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does as that water warms is it increases evaporation. Any cook will tell you this. You know, if you put a pot of water on the stove and you start heating that and it starts boiling, all of that moisture starts rising up onto your ceiling and falling back down, dripping on you.
Right.
Same thing with El Nino. As the seas warm, all of that moisture rises into the sky. And then because the world is revolving, of course, but that moisture then travels over the continents. It cools down. It falls back to the earth as rain.
All right. Are you attributing all of the ocean warming to underwater volcanism, or are there other factors?
I am attributing it all to underwater volcanism. I'm certainly not having everyone agree with me on that, but yes, I think it's all, and one of the big reasons I believe this is that this has been published in Science, is that the warming begins at 2 miles down. The ocean is warming 2 miles down before the surface. Now, I have no way in the world of imagining how we humans could heat the ocean 2 miles down
mm-hmm.
prior to heating the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why I would believe that. But my concern is what happens when all of this moisture starts falling in the wintertime? No, there's no question of the warming oceans. They have warmed by 2 to 3 degrees since 1950. No question. I agree with you 100%. And that, in turn, has led to greatly increased precipitation. Right now, worldwide, flood activity is the worst that it's been since before Christopher Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, what happens when all of that rain starts falling in the wintertime?
More flooding.
More flooding, but with snow. You know, a couple of years ago, anybody who's listening in Kentucky, a couple of years ago, there were some rainstorms in Kentucky where they received 15 inches of rain in one day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kentucky does get snow. If that had fallen in the winter, meteorologists, when they try to predict how much snow will fall if a rainstorm should turn to snow, they add a zero. I'm simplifying a little, but not much. So 1 inch of rain at a zero would be 10 inches of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means that 15 inches of rain in Kentucky, if that had fallen as snow, would
yes.
have been 150 inches.
150 inches.
Of snow. It would have buried every one-story house. Every one-story building in town would have collapsed from
uh-huh.
the weight. It would have buried every trailer truck on the freeway. It would be an unmitigated disaster.
Might even be the beginning of a new ice age. I mean, nobody might get out from under that one, 150 right. inches. All right, I'll hold it right there. Robert Felix is my guest. Not by fire, but by ice is his book. And he does agree there is another ice age well on the way. We may disagree as to some of the cause. But once again, when all is said and done, does it really matter? Well, not that much. We do agree, you see, it's happening. So we ought to begin planning for how things will be when it's finished happening, because it's underway right now. I'm Art Bell.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
The observations are the same. Robert Felix is my guest. He thinks the warming of the oceans is caused by volcanism. I don't know that it really matters what's causing it. Fact is, the oceans certainly are warming. Now, in a moment, we'll discuss exactly what that means, and it means a lot more than you think that it does. Once the oceans begin to warm, the ice begins to melt, there are a series of events that will occur. Check that. That are beginning to occur now and will accelerate. We'll explain. Well, all right. So we may or disagree, Robert, on what's heating the oceans, but the fact of the matter is the oceans are heating. Those measurements have already been made. Woods Hole has made all kinds of interesting scientific observations of late, and the oceans are heating. So now what I'd like is for the audience to understand when the oceans do heat, what that's going to mean and how the dynamics begin to happen. For example, there's the Atlantic Drift. You might talk about the ocean currents in the ocean, what it means when the ocean heats. How does all of this translate to an ice age?
You bet. Thank you. Yes. You know, we do see the pictures of the melting glaciers, and I believe that the glaciers that are floating in the water, I don't have to believe it. I mean, it's true. The glaciers, as they float in those warming waters, are indeed melting. But when you go inland, it's an entirely different story, and this is one of the reasons why I believe that we're seeing the beginning of the ice age right now. Glaciers right now are growing in Norway. They're growing like crazy in Norway. Glaciers are growing in Canada. Glaciers are growing in Ecuador. Glaciers are growing in Switzerland. They're growing in Russia. They're growing in New Zealand. They're growing inland in Greenland. They're growing in Antarctica. And here's one, Art, that you may not be aware of. Glaciers are growing right here in the United States. And this is one newspapers should be yelling this to the high heavens, and should be listening to your movie or watching your movie. Glaciers are growing in Washington State. Glaciers are growing in California. In Washington State, on Mount Rainier, there's a glacier called the Nisqually Glacier. The city of Tacoma gets some of their water supply from the Nisqually, and because of that, they began measuring the Nisqually Glacier back in 1931. It's the best measured glacier in the Northern Hemisphere. The Nisqually Glacier is growing thicker at the rate of 18 feet a year, two stories a year, and glaciologists expect that added weight will make it begin advancing within this decade, meaning within the next 6 years, it will begin advancing. That is because of these warming oceans. They're sending, and to answer your question, they're sending up the excess moisture, coming back to us in the lowlands as rain, but in the mountains it's landing as snow.
Mm-hmm, but again,
now glaciers are also growing on Mount Shuckson in northern Washington State. When you get to California, Mount Shasta has seven glaciers. All seven of the glaciers have been growing since 1950. The Whitney Glacier, which is the largest glacier on Mount Shasta, is growing. Several of the glaciers have doubled in size since 1950. And I think we're getting a disservice done to us because we're not being told about this.
Okay. So we have glaciers growing all over the world.
We do. You know,
But on the other hand, we also have ice melting at an alarming rate in the north part of the world and the south part of the world. Now, this is fresh water entering salt water and diluting salinity. And now, again, I want to get back to the ocean, if we could.
Sure.
How is it, please explain, that these warming ocean temperatures combined with the fresh water coming from the northern and southern part of the world entering the ocean, well, how will all this end up causing an ice age?
Well, the best I can do there is I can refer back to an article that was in Discover Magazine in September of 2002. In fact, Discover Magazine devoted a lot of the magazine. The cover said, "A New Ice Age." And it has to do with these ocean currents that you're talking about. The Gulf Stream has been getting a lot more fresh water in it in the last 30 years than it has ever had before.
That's a, well, we can see where it's coming from.
Yes. Well, yes. What happens is the Gulf Stream picks up warm water from the tropics and moves it north up between United States and Europe. It moves it to the north, and it ends up warming England and warming parts of Europe. They're quite a bit further north than New York City, but
I believe you'd find that part of Europe is roughly same latitude as Labrador. So,
okay.
So it should have the climate of Labrador, but it doesn't.
And exactly. It's warmer, a lot warmer, because of the Gulf Stream that you're talking about.
Yes.
But as all of this fresh water, and there's no doubt, I mean, Woods, you mentioned Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution a little bit ago.
Yes.
And they're the ones that have been tracking this.
Right.
And they're the ones that realize that all of this fresh water that has been pouring into the Atlantic, fresh water both from the melting and also from the huge increase in precipitation, that fresh water could change the salinity of the ocean enough. What happens is that the warm water goes north until it gets up somewhere near Iceland, and then it starts to sink back down into the, to the depths of the ocean,
right,
moves back to the tropics, and then it comes back up, and it's like a giant conveyor belt.
Yes.
It continually moves this warm water to Europe. Too much fresh water in the past has apparently, but scientists believe this, is that too much fresh water can cause that conveyor belt to shut down, and it can shut down in a matter of 3 years.
Yeah, I read some amazing things about that. As you point out, it can shut down very quickly. And the recent measurements, I'm trying to recall exactly, but it was like 30% or 40% change in this conveyor belt already measured. And of course, as you know, Europe had this incredible heat wave where thousands died in France last year. And I just read an article said scientists are saying, well, here you go. That was the number one event. That marks the beginning of this whole thing, this cycle, whether we agree or disagree on the causes.
I agree with you that it could very well mark the beginning of the cycle.
Yeah, well, you're agreeing with the scientists. So I'm sort of curious, if this conveyor belt stops, which it could do very quickly. The ice cores say this kind of thing happened, despite what a lot of scientists say, very quickly, not over thousands of years, as we learned in school, but rather quickly. Now, what exactly would occur, Robert? Can you project what would happen if the conveyor belt stopped?
Oh, it would be an absolutely worldwide disaster. Average temperatures would drop by, and this may not sound like much at first, but average winter temperatures would drop by 5 degrees over much of the United States, and they drop by 10 degrees in the northeastern United States and Europe.
You're right. That doesn't sound like much. It sounds uncomfortable, but doesn't sound like much otherwise. But it's a lot. What does it mean happen?
Well, the thing is that in the last ice age, temperatures were only about 7 degrees colder than they are right now. It's not a cold age. It's an ice age. You know, there was a scientist back in the 1970s, Morris Ewing. He was head of Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. He said it's cold enough to have an ice age right now, All we need is more precipitation.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I want to understand is if I live in Paris, Robert,
mm-hmm.
or I live, I don't know, in London, and this occurs, what's going to happen to me?
Well, you know, the mountain glaciers are going to start growing. They're going to start advancing down from the Alps. Rivers and harbors are going to start freezing up. In the United States, the North Atlantic shipping lines can be caught in ice. This last winter we had a case where Boston Harbor had ice, and New York City had ice that the Staten Island Ferry couldn't get through. Well, one of the big things that would happen in the Northeast is that their winter oil supply is brought in by water. And so there would be a big problem just almost immediately if those shipping lanes started to freeze.
They would freeze.
And that's enough. You know, there was an occasion during the Little Ice Age, during the 1600s, when the ice started advancing out of the Alps. And what happened in England is that they started getting more rain than usual. And the winter rains lasted for about 6 weeks longer than normal. That was enough to disrupt the planting season. It destroyed the wheat supply. And literally millions of people starved to death. My big worry is that we'll be fighting in the streets for food long before we're covered with ice. That's one of my...
People are always wanting some sort of timetable. If this were to happen very quickly from that side, if it did happen very quickly, what are we talking about? How many years ahead of us? How much time before things begin to get untenable? And as you have just suggested, people are starving and fighting for food. That's pretty awful.
Well, this depends. And I mean, your movie, I won't give it away, but you're certainly saying it begins quickly. And I've been thinking, I heard a lady call during the last hour and asked about Yellowstone.
Yes.
If Yellowstone should go off, I would say that we would be in an ice age in a matter of weeks.
Weeks. Explain, if the caldera there let go, what would happen? If Yellowstone let go, what would happen?
Oh, well, for one thing, Yellowstone, the last major eruption was like 640,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at a magnetic reversal, by the way. But during that, when that happened, the volcanic ash in eastern Nebraska ended up being 7 feet deep. I mean, scientists now that have done excavations, it was 7 feet deep. And there would have a volcanic eruption that size, there would be 12 to 14 inches of volcanic ash on the Gulf Coast.
Sounds like Vesuvius, you know.
It would be the worst volcanic eruption since Toba of 75,000 years ago. Now, if you've got 7 feet of volcanic ash covering Nebraska and covering the entire Midwest, how much food is going to get through? None. We would be fighting in the streets in days. And that's what I worry about, is if that goes off, then it would cool the entire planet by about 20 degrees, and I would assume that underwater volcanic activity would be increasing at the same time, because it usually does. It's tied together.
Right.
So you'd have oceans even warmer than they are today, pumping all of that moisture into the skies that are 20 degrees colder. And there would be just snow. The Earth would be like a giant snowball.
What are the indications now at Yellowstone? What are we seeing? What are the warning signs right now?
Well, one of the big ones is that the land in around Yellowstone, since 1923, has risen 29 inches, and that has risen as much as most active volcanoes. So, you know, when Mount St. Helens exploded, there was the bulge that happened first.
Yes.
They've also discovered at the bottom of the largest lake at Yellowstone, and I don't know the name of that lake, but at the bottom of the largest lake, there's now a bulge in the bottom of the lake the size of 7 football fields.
Really?
So, and I've heard callers to your program talk about the heat there, is that the ground in some areas of Yellowstone has gotten so hot that they've had to close some of the trails because it was burning people's shoes.
I had heard that, yes.
Yes, and so there, I see those indications. There also have been reports of many more earthquakes there than normal, which are also a harbinger. Now, it may settle back down.
It has done that. We've had swarms of earthquakes at Yellowstone, and then it does quiet back down. Now, one of these times, it may not. It may let loose.
Well, if that one goes, then if that goes, and I certainly hope it doesn't, if that goes, then your scenario of speed is absolutely on the money.
A lot of my listeners don't live near Yellowstone, so they may not understand the magnitude of what you're talking about. I live, for example, in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
What would we look forward to here, or Southern California? What might it notice if Yellowstone let go?
Well, the ash, number one, the lava would be expected to shoot 30 miles into the sky, not the ash.
Lava?
Actual lava.
Lava, 30 miles into the sky?
30 miles into the sky.
Uh-huh.
They calculate that if Yellowstone should go, everyone within 600 miles radius would be killed almost instantaneously.
My God.
But then what would happen is that all of this ash would rise into the sky, and, you know, the Earth revolves, so the entire planet would be shrouded in darkness.
But you're saying everybody within 600 miles of Yellowstone would virtually be killed instantly?
That is what scientists believe, yes.
I suppose you would have, if you get lava going 30, did you say 30 miles?
30 miles, the lava, 30 miles into the sky. Yeah, that's not a typo.
30 miles into the sky, that's hard to even contemplate. So you would have, you'd have falling rocks.
Oh, it would be incredible. Now, and this, by the way, is not coming from me. There's a, I do have a link to this on my website, by the way. It's iceagenow.com.
Uh-huh.
But in February of 2000, BBC had a long session on supervolcanoes and on Yellowstone. And Michael Rampino of NASA was one of the people on there who's a volcano expert. But he said that the temperatures could drop by 20 degrees worldwide, at least temporarily. And that, again, that would be just a disaster.
Doing a little quick math, you know, you're talking about lava being blown 150,000 feet up, roughly, right?
Yes.
Now, that's, you know, we're up to the edge of space there.
Well, we're looking at a volcano that is, it would be the biggest volcano that has ever erupted since Toba.
I'm just trying to think, though, if you blew lava up to 150,000 feet, you'd reach super cold temperatures, you'd get rocks. And
rocks would be falling from the sky.
Rocks would be falling from the sky, yes.
They would.
God.
It is just, I don't like to think about it, because the other problem is I don't see how one could prepare for it. That one is one that I sure hope it doesn't happen. I mean, that would be how would you prepare for that? I don't know. An ice age, I think we can prepare for.
And you were saying it would drop temperatures worldwide. Did you say 20 degrees?
20 degrees worldwide. Yes, and scientists, when they've studied, now, because Toba at 75,000 years ago is easier for them to study. And when Toba erupted, that is what happened. And scientists believe that there were probably a lot of humans on the planet at that time, but that it killed probably all but a few thousand.
Whew. It's hard for the average person to even contemplate a disaster of that, even imagine. I mean, a 600-mile circle of total death.
Right. It is. It is, but that is what, I imagine that's probably why our government doesn't talk too much about Yellowstone, because what could you do?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely. Evacuate a 600-mile range around Yellowstone. I wonder if they would even, you've got to wonder if they would consider that at the government level.
This would have 10,000 times the explosive force of Mount St. Helens.
And with that, we'll take a break, Robert, top of the hour coming up from the high desert, middle of the night, which is where we talk about things like this. I'm Art Bell, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.
the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
While you're contemplating what would happen if Yellowstone let go and lava was blown 150,000 feet or better into the air, and mostly out of the air, frankly, to the edge of space, and then came raining back down as rocks and virtually incinerated everybody in a 600-mile radius of Yellowstone. While you're contemplating that, and then, of course, the pain would begin from that point out. It's unimaginable, anything that big. While you're contemplating that, I have contemplated a question for Robert Felix, my guest on this matter and others, in a moment. Once again, Robert Felix, and ladies and gentlemen, his book is Not by Fire, but by Ice. And that book has been out how long now?
It's been out since 1997. I did upgrade it last year, and it's on its, I think it's fourth printing, something like that.
That's a good one then.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to make you the President of the United States. How about that?
Okay.
President Felix has a kind of a ring to it. President Felix. All right. President Felix, if a group of, scientists, from renowned institutions and universities came to you in a sort of a panic, and they said, President Felix, here's the evidence. Yellowstone is going to let go in an apocalyptic manner, and they described to you the miles of lava being thrown into the atmosphere and beyond, and they say, Mr. President, this is going to happen, and we feel very soon now, based on the following very sound scientific data, what would you, President Felix, do?
I'd have to be very hesitant about announcing that to the public for fear of panic. That would be really tough. I would have to be so positive of it if I were, I'm not president, and I'm one lone voice.
I have made you president.
But
you are president.
I don't know, and I don't want to give away your movie.
Don't give away my movie. Well,
I have seen, but
there are going to be certain elements of it.
I'll just have to say it for myself, is that I would probably, at first, do nothing. Because I would not want to.
So you'd be like every other president.
Mm-hmm. I would probably do nothing for fear.
And if it's wrong, oh my gosh, you know,
yes.
You have people evacuate and then you're
so
wrong.
So you would doubt the scientists then, even if they laid what appeared to be concrete evidence on your Oval Office desk?
You know, from all of the research that I have done over the years, I have discovered that I can pretty well find the figures to back up whichever position I want to back up.
Yeah.
And so I would have to really trust those scientists very strongly.
Yeah. Well, so President Felix would sit back and say, well, there's nothing we can do. Or you would do, in the end, nothing. In other words, you would think that the possibility of being wrong and evacuating an area a third of the U.S., let's say.
Once I were positive of it.
By the way, is that what it would amount to? Would you have to be evacuating about a third of the United States or what? If you did act.
Number one, I'd have to be positive. You know, if I
were, okay, you've already said that, but let's say you had to evacuate. How much would you have to evacuate?
Well, you'd evacuate the 600-mile radius, 600-mile diameter around Yellowstone. And depending on how it looks like the prevailing winds are, much of the Midwest. Because if that area is going to be covered with 7 feet of volcanic ash, I don't see how people would survive that. That is going to cover every railroad, is going to cover every freeway. There's no planes going to be able to come in and rescue anyone.
All right, what about
it's going to go into the rivers.
Yes, oh, yes.
Water supplies are gone.
What about the aftermath in other ways? I mean, you talk about a 20-degree temperature drop for the world. Wouldn't that mean that large parts of the world, including where you're standing right now, might well be totally frozen over?
During the eruption of Toba, which was a supervolcano like Yellowstone, three-quarters of all plants in the Northern Hemisphere were killed.
Three out of four.
Three out of four of all plants in the Northern Hemisphere. So one of the first things I would do is start stockpiling food. As a government, I'd be stockpiling food. As an individual, I'd be stockpiling food.
Mm.
That would be very important because there will be no food supply for a while if this happens. But that's just the first phase. And then you start getting all that snow and all of the cold and all of the rain that's coming with it. It would be just so tough to survive it. It would also almost make your movie look preferable.
Yeah, apparently it would be much worse than the scenario of a virtual new ice age starting out as it did in The Day After Tomorrow.
Yes.
But the effects, the end effects, I don't know. They'd be perhaps more severe, but the same sort of thing would happen, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And I really I don't know the timing exactly, but I do believe that we are on the verge, with all of the things that have been going on with Yellowstone, with all of that activity, and volcanic activity around the world is now the greatest that it's been in more than 500 years.
Well, how much... In the real world, how much more concerned should we be about what you've just told me about Yellowstone? You know, the people burning their feet, the cordoned off areas, the government not much talking about it. I mean, what level of concern should we have on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would be concerned right now on, let's say, a number 5, because the earthquake activity has picked up because it is acting in ways that it hasn't acted in recorded history. But, you know, it's too bad that we don't have more information to go on. The last time it actually exploded, and this could be a small one, too. About 13,800 years ago, there was an explosion in one of the lakes where one of those lava domes built up, like is building up now.
Yes.
And that only affected areas for about 5 miles around. So, you know, we have to wait and see what else is coming. Because if it's just something that's going to affect things that are 5 miles around, that's that's no worse than Mount St. Helens, and that certainly wasn't a disaster to the entire country.
But Yellowstone, in the manner you described...
If it does that, because Yellowstone is such a large caldera, I don't think anyone recognizes how large it is. It's 52 miles wide and 28 miles long. That's the caldera.
People just don't understand that volcanic activity can come from other than the top of an apparent volcano, right?
Right. Yeah, there's that kind of volcanic activity. And then in the oceans, of course, there's rift volcanoes. And I talk about those in the book, too. But rift volcanoes are where all that happens is that a crack opens up in the ground.
Yes.
And lava starts pouring out. They have rift volcanoes in Iceland where you can actually see it happening. But back in the 1990s, there was a rift volcano discovered off the coast of Oregon, off the coast of Astoria, Oregon.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was called a coaxial volcano. It was about 4 miles long. And the thing about these underwater volcanoes is they pump lava into the sea that is 2,100 degrees hot. That's 10 times the boiling point. And the water boils. There's
could you tell me how that then converts in the way it modifies the ocean water it's connected with? In other words, a certain mass of a lava will heat how much water to what degree?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. But I think that underwater volcanoes, for instance, had an awful lot to do with the dinosaur extinction, because there were literally hundreds of cubic miles of lava that poured into the seas.
Do you dispute the theory that it was an object from space colliding with Earth, or do you believe that to be accurate?
No, I think it was underwater volcanic activity.
You do? You don't?
I do.
So, oh, really? So,
yeah, there. You know, the Chicxulub crater and I address this in the book too, by the way. But the Chicxulub crater in the Gulf of Mexico, the one that we say was caused by that huge asteroid. There are some scientists, and I know that Charles Officer of Dartmouth College is one who's published a book on it, that some scientists believe that was caused by massive, explosive underwater volcanic activity. And I would agree with them. You know, that caldera, Chicxulub, was first discovered by workers for Pemex, for the Mexican oil company. They were drilling for oil. And they drilled through a layer of andesite, which is volcanic glass. And so when that was first discovered, it was identified as a volcanic crater. Now, part of the problem of identifying it, it's a half a mile below water. So it's not something you can just go take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I do believe that was caused by what I'm talking about right here. That would have been, I believe that was a supervolcano.
Of what magnitude compared to, say, what we just talked about with respect to Yellowstone? Or of what, if you go back to what
it would be bigger. It would have been, because...
Bigger than Yellowstone.
Yes, the crater, scientists believe that crater, well, they don't believe, they've measured it. It's about 110 miles across. So that is... What, that's four times bigger than Yellowstone.
I know that they've measured the debris and coring they've done, I don't know, off the coast of South America up into the Caribbean. They've measured some coring that had the debris that they thought was from an asteroid hit.
Mm-hmm. Well,
right?
You know,
but you're saying, no, this debris came from the spitting of a volcano thousands of miles away.
I believe it did. You know, one of your listeners emailed me before the program tonight and wanted me to talk about the iridium, because the debris that you're talking about, the iridium,
yes,
there's a layer of clay around the world at that borderline 65 million years ago.
That's correct.
That layer of clay is about a quarter inch thick, in some areas thicker, and it has iridium in it. Now, some people think that entire layer of clay is iridium, but no, what it is 10 parts per billion is iridium. And it turns out that many, some of today's volcanoes, some on the island of Reunion, some in Hawaii, have 50% of that amount of iridium even in their emissions today. So I believe that that iridium came from massive volcanic activity.
Hmm. I suppose also an asteroid strike could initiate. I'm no expert on this, but if you slammed something gigantic into the Earth and penetrated the Earth to a great degree, couldn't you begin a chain of seismic events and maybe even volcanic activity?
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
So it could be that one set off the other, could it not?
It could be. It could be. There's other occasions where the extinction 248 million years ago, there appears to be craters from that time, the Popogai crater in Siberia, but it also corresponds with a time of massive lava flows in Siberia. So,
but these craters that are made when there's that big hit, you believe these what are volcano artifacts?
I do.
So it's like looking into the top of an extinct volcano.
I do, because of the debris, and some of it is volcanic debris. And the biggest clue that scientists say that it was an asteroid is that iridium, and yet that iridium can be explained as coming from volcanoes. So yeah, I think it's an earthly process.
You say a modern volcano will exhibit 50% the amount of iridium found in the cores?
Yes. Some of them. The island, volcanoes on the island of Reunion.
How do you account for that kind of difference, though, in the amount of iridium?
It apparently depends on how deep in the earth the lava came from. And so I would assume that the bigger the volcano, the
deeper
it comes from, yeah.
Huh.
It is still up in the air.
Do you at all speculate on the cause of volcanic activity suddenly becoming, in other words, of the planet suddenly getting a lot of volcanic activity? Why?
I think it has to do with the earthly process called precession of the equinoxes.
Precession, is that just a way to measure time?
No, what it is, you know, the Earth is, let me see if I can draw a picture here for the listeners, but the Earth is tilted on its axis. I mean, our axis of rotation is tilted away from true north.
Yes.
Okay, and if you ever watched a top as it spins, you've noticed that the top never stands perfectly straight up and down. It tilts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it tilts to the right, sometimes it tilts to the left, but it's constantly on the move, and the Earth does the same thing, but on a much slower scale.
Right.
Now, if you could look at the Earth from space, you'd see that just like a spinning top, the Earth's axis of rotation tilts. And the Earth's axis of rotation constantly moves in a circle, just like that top does. And that circular movement, that's what's called precession. And it takes about 23,000 years to make that full circle. So if you could stick put a long stick through our axis of rotation,
mm-hmm.
Long enough to reach into the heavens, you'd see that stick right now would point towards the star Polaris. And that's why it's called a pole star, because the North Pole points toward it. But
right.
12,000 years from now, it'll point toward a different star. It'll point toward Vega. And 23,000 years from now, it'll point toward Polaris again. Well, that's precession. And that ice ages match that cycle. Increases in volcanic activity match that cycle. Increases in flood activity match that cycle. And that precession is what I believe is causing these earthly changes. And that's why we're seeing the increase in volcanic activity.
That's fascinating.
Now, you know,
so the precession in the amount of tilt there is in the Earth. That's what we're saying, right?
No, the tilt. No, this is just that the entire axis of rotation makes a full circle every 23,000 years.
Well, in effect, though, the tilt is changing a little bit.
Okay,
right?
Yes, it also tilts up and down a little bit and changes. But this is the one where it's pointing. Where our North Pole points to in the heavens is constantly moving.
Right.
And for whatever reason, we have these calamitous things happen to our Earth at two sides of that 23,000-year cycle at every 11,500 years. And, it, you know, that means that we are pointed a different way from the sun, essentially. And the sun is a magnetic star, and I believe that that magnetic activity, that as we are changing, we are going in and out of alignment with the sun's, with the solar system's magnetic field.
You know, so many of my guests, Robert, talk about events of a biblical nature almost that occur on a cycle from 11 to 13,000 years, somewhere in there. It doesn't matter who you talk to, Richard C. Hoagland, just on and on, people who predict major events, people who talk about planets that come and go. That fits into the same kind of cycle that you're talking about, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Planet X, so-called Planet X.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether there is such a thing.
Even go into Zachariah Sitchin's work. All these cycles is what I'm saying. There's a big similarity there. No matter who you're talking to, right now we're talking to Robert Felix, but he's talking about the same kind of cycle, the exact same kind of cycle. That alone should give you pause.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Yeah, how about the Hopi? You could add them to the list, right? Andrea in Portales, New Mexico says, all right, the Hopi Indians agree with your guest. It is indeed the precession of the equinoxes that causes the earth changes. And thus, it is a natural cycle. One volcano eruption pollutes the air more than all 6 billion years of us do in 1 year, or all 6 billion of us do in 1 year. Very, very interesting. We'll be right back. It's funny. It just occurred to me that not just Robert Felix, but all of these people, even including the Hopi. The Hopi you can add to the long list of those who predict something is going to occur and in a certain procession by a certain time. Robert, so how do we know how close to the edge of this moment of repeat we are?
Well, one of the things that I'm looking at is I'm watching the El Niños.
Uh-huh.
Because I believe that those El Niños are an indication of what's to come. Now, in 1982, we had the El Niño of the century. I mean, had you ever heard of El Niño before 1982?
No.
No, most people hadn't. It was no big deal. 1982, we had the El Niño of the century. It caused those huge floods in South America. It did $8 billion worth of damage. We called it the El Niño of the century. Then in 1997, we had another one, did $97 billion worth of damage, and that has been renamed the El Niño of the century. I would say to watch El Niños. I am, you know, now here I'm guessing, but the next large El Niño should occur somewhere 2008, 2009, and I would say watch that. And if that is even bigger than the previous El Niños, mm-hmm. I think we're on our way. That's one of the ways that I would say to watch. Another thing that I would watch is what's happening in Europe, because if this Gulf Stream shuts down the way that the Woods Hole scientists think it could, mm-hmm. then Europe will be affected, I would say, first. Europe and the far...
Actually, what scares me about Woods Hole is they say the process is well underway.
Yes.
It's well underway, and they say it could intensify, it could happen very quickly.
Yes, they say it could happen within 3 years.
It's weird that you could come to this point, I guess, where... I'm no scientist, but where... the salinity had been diluted enough, the temperature had changed enough, that suddenly the current would virtually not just keep slowing at the alarming rate it's slowing now, but would suddenly quit.
Right, not just slow, but actually quit. There are some scientists now who are predicting an ice age for Great Britain within the next 20 years. The Pentagon is looking into it. So, you know, you had asked earlier about what would you do as the president. Well, the Pentagon is looking into this.
You clearly said you would do nothing.
That was about Yellowstone.
Oh, that's right.
That was about Yellowstone. I am doing something about this.
Well, you know what? We can make it about this if you want, because really, what can you do about volcanoes?
Not much. That I know of.
Nothing.
No.
Right? Can't do anything about it. So it's not all that different a question, President.
No, but when it comes to ice ages, I am screaming to the heavens as much as I can to look out.
In order to do what?
Well, one of the things during an ice age, if that's what it is as an ice age, it's not a worldwide catastrophe. During the last ice age, what happened essentially was that the climate of Chicago moved to Georgia. That's what happened. And
well,
temperatures didn't fall that much. Seattle was covered by more than a half of a mile of ice. But the ice...
You see, things like this would be very meaningful. I've got a lot of listeners in Seattle.
Yes. Well,
you know, when they hear covered with a half mile of ice, this has meaning to them.
It was. It was covered by more than a half a mile of ice. The ice extended as far south as Olympia. But 150 miles south of Olympia, and scientists know this from the plants that were growing in the area,
mm-hmm.
150 miles south of Olympia, it was only about 7 degrees colder than it is right now.
But this is still cold comfort for those in Seattle and the other areas you mentioned, large number of my listeners.
Yes. Yeah. And well, almost all of Canada was covered by 1 to 2 miles of ice.
Now, you see, again, I have many concerned people because we're heard all across Canada. So
that was covered. What I'd say, watch Newfoundland, watch New Brunswick, because as near as I can tell, previous ice ages, it essentially started there by having, not because it was getting colder, but because they were just getting more and more snow, more and more snow. And then it works its way west. Now, last year, and if you have listeners in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia, I'd love to hear from them. Because
you would, huh?
The last couple of years, I believe they've had record snows. And so that's something
we have listeners in that area.
Yes.
I mean, there's strange stuff going on all over the globe. My listeners in Alaska, they could tell you tales about what's going on in Alaska right now.
Different story there. Now, Alaska... And that gave me a problem too, Art, is how do I explain if I'm thinking we're going to an ice age, how come the permafrost in Alaska is melting?
Yeah, I mean, last several years they've had trouble with the races up there, the big dog sled races.
Right, the Iditarod.
They don't have the snow and the ice right. to have the race.
Well, what I think is happening, I think it has to do with the warming oceans, is any land mass that is close to the warming oceans, where the breezes, the warmer breezes are blowing over them, is going to be melting. But when you go inland, Art, that's where the difference is. When you go inland, the Antarctic ice sheet is growing thicker. The Greenland ice sheet is growing thicker. Now, the Antarctic ice sheet covers something like 5 million square miles. The Greenland ice sheet covers another 700,000 square miles. That is twice as big as the continental United States.
It's big.
That is 100 times bigger than all of the rest of the world's glaciers put together. So what I'm saying here is 99% of the world's glaciers are growing. We are only hearing about the ones on the edges that are melting. I think that it has started.
Well, I guess people are not as inclined to measure one as the other. Would that be true? If what you're saying is correct, then why do we not hear about I have heard a little bit. I mean, I've seen a couple of stories about the thickening ice sheets. I have seen a couple of stories. But in general, you're right. People believe that things are melting. Why is that getting all the attention if it's not scientifically the whole story?
I don't know. I've got an article here, August 22, 2002, from the Goddard Space Flight Center, that radar image satellite records are showing that there is an increase in Antarctic sea ice cover. I have another article that shows that glaciers in Antarctica have been moving, and this was March 9, 2003, that glaciers, masses of Antarctic ice, have been moving twice as fast as usual. And there's seven glaciers mentioned here, the Boydell, the Sjogren, the Edgeworth, the Bombardier, the Drygalski. They've actually entered active surging phases toward the sea. So the reason they're surging is because of the added weight. They're surging towards the sea, so there's more of them to melt. So also in Greenland, I have these published papers that it's growing thicker. But that's from satellite images that not everybody gets to see. But you can take a cruise ship.
Well, I know, but if it's an ultimate truth alongside the other truth about Alaska and the areas that we know are melting,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I must tell you, Robert, to look at the North Pole 20 years ago and to look at it now is pretty damn frightening. A lot of it, a high percentage of it even, is just flat gone, Robert. And I'm even hearing rumors that they're encouraging people who are flying over the pole, you know, to go to a quick trip to Europe or whatever, to keep their windows shut while they're going over the pole. Now, you know, maybe that doesn't have any meaning. Maybe it does have meaning. I have no idea. But those who have peeked out of their little windows while going over the North Pole have been astounded at the amount of blue water.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it has to do with the underwater volcanic activity. During the last ice age, the Arctic Ocean had no more ice on it than it has right now, even during the depth of the last ice age. And I believe that has to be, I mean, how do you explain that? How would that have happened during the last ice age when Canada was covered with 2 miles of ice and the Arctic Ocean had no more ice than now? How would you explain that other than underwater volcanic activity?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Certainly willing to consider what you're saying. I don't know myself, but I'm willing to consider it. It seems like you assign an awful lot to volcanic action, including, you know, what killed the dinosaurs and all the rest of it. So you're a very strong believer in this.
I am, and you know, and I'm certainly not in the mainstream here. I'm alone, and yet I have quite a few scientists that do agree.
Hold on. Let's go back to the reason why this is really important. Why, you know, your side of things regarding the building ice and what that means in the larger scheme of things is just virtually ignored compared to the melting that's going on. Why? I mean, that I just don't get that.
The only thing that I can imagine is that I think that during the last 20 years, any scientist who would have pointed this out or really pushed it would have lost their funding.
Why?
Because we believe so strongly in man-made global warming that it's almost become a religion.
Well, maybe so.
Yeah.
But listen, it is happening. I mean, global warming, that is.
Ocean warming is definitely happening. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, but as goes the ocean, so goes our fortune, right?
Yes.
Our fortune is with the...
But it's not all because temperatures in the atmosphere have been going down for decades. This comes from Alabama meteorologist John Christie. Mm-hmm. He's been studying satellite data since the 1970s, and he has found, and I haven't heard of any scientist who disagrees with this, is that temperatures in the atmosphere are going down. Temperatures on land, I'll give you one to consider, is the United States Department of Agriculture draws a plant hardiness zone maps. Those
yes.
are the maps you see on the backs of seed packets.
Sure.
That show you where it's safe to plant something.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, in 1960, the USDA drew up a plant hardiness zone map that covered Canada and the United States, and they divided the entire area into 10 zones based on temperature.
Okay.
Okay. In 1990... the USDA drew up a new plant hardiness zone map, and I have both of those maps on my website.
And the difference is?
Temperatures in, for instance, in Tennessee and Alabama, temperatures in many of those areas during that 30 years declined by 10 degrees. Average temperatures by 10 degrees. Not, they didn't go up. They went down.
All right.
But we're not hearing about
it. All right. Here's one we did just recently hear about, and maybe you'd like to comment on it, and I'm sorry I don't remember the scientific institution that made the discovery, but the story was basically that the horrid Dust Bowl, that time in the United States where the middle part of the country turned into an unlivable almost surface of Mars, right?
Yes.
The Dust Bowl. That was an artifact of a couple of degrees of ocean temperature change.
I believe that.
There was a recent story about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that might, you'd figure that might fit right in with what you're saying.
Yes, I didn't see that, but I do. You know, there's a scientist in Germany who also is publishing about Little Ice Age. It's a scientist by the name of Dr. Theodor Landscheidt. And he's at the Schroeder Institute for Research in Cycles in Solar. He's studying solar activity.
Yes.
In Germany.
Yes.
And he has published a lot, but I have links to his papers too. But he believes that, and he as far as I'm concerned, he proves it. But he believes that we'll be into a new ice age by the year 2030, which is, I think, it's going to be even sooner. But here's someone with worldwide credentials, essentially, that's essentially saying the same thing. And I think your movie is going to help so much make people aware that something is coming.
Yes, but there's nothing that really can be done about it. Or is there? I mean, let's say the worst-case scenario happens. I believe recently, with regard to the Pentagon, it was commissioned that somebody write up the worst-case scenario, which was pretty scary. What do you consider to be the worst-case scenario? I mean, you know, mainly we've got listeners here in North America. How will the North Americans be affected? And what should they do? What can any individual do to prepare for what may be soon, you're saying?
Well, one of the things I would say is going back to food, because I think that food will be the big thing, and just the knowledge. You know, if we know the truth, you put me on a plane to Alaska and you tell me in advance where I'm going, and I'll figure out what to do, and I think people will figure out what to do. But if you tell me I'm going to Miami and then you've dumped me off in Alaska, I'm in trouble. And I think that's what's happening today. We're being told we're going to Miami. We're being told these things. But I think, you know, that we're headed into this ice age. With that said, though, greenhouses. I think greenhouses will be like gold. Because then you'll
providing an environment for something to grow.
Yeah, little private greenhouses, I think, will be a great idea for somebody.
Would it be that bad? I mean, would agriculture otherwise in all the good, familiar breadbasket kind of areas of the U.S. be any longer possible?
Well, you know, you don't need a full-fledged ice age. You know, if snow should remain on the ground in Canada,
uh-huh.
Let's just say 8 inches of snow remains on the ground through one growing season.
That would definitely ruin it.
That's all it takes. It doesn't take a mile of ice. Last year I was doing an interview on a radio station in Kentucky, and a farmer called in. He said that his farm had been in the family for more than 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this was he was talking about the previous year, but it had rained so much that spring that he was not able to put his tractors in the field. That farm had put out a corn crop every year dependably for more than 100 years. And just because it was too rainy, he couldn't put his tractor in the field. That's the sort of thing I think it's not going to be, it doesn't have to be this great big drastic happening that the TV coverages are going to be showing, but these farmers aren't going to be able to work, you know, or they're not going to be able to plant.
Is this going to be true across the entire current growing areas of the U.S.?
I don't know whether it will be at the same time. Now, I can tell you where the ice ended during the last ice age.
Well, assuming that we're into an ice age,
yes.
Where would you draw the line with regard to agriculture? There'd be a new line to draw, right?
Oh, absolutely. During the last ice age, as I said earlier, the ice went as far south as Seattle, as Olympia, Washington.
Yeah, I understand. I'm asking you for guesses.
Well, then that ice moved back up to the Canadian border in Idaho.
Right.
And then it essentially followed the Missouri River. On the north side of the Missouri River, there was a cliff of ice about 15 stories tall. On the south side of the Missouri River, people were able to live. So I assume farmers would be able to.
Boy, that is a pretty sharp dividing line you're
talking
about. It is.
15 stories of ice on one side, not ice on the other. Holy smokes. Now, if you've got listeners in Wisconsin, they can call in and tell us about the Eskers.
What are those?
Esker. Those are the moraines that were dropped there by the glaciers.
We're going to have a chance for them to do that and for others to do it too, because we're about to go to open lines with Robert Felix. So if you have a question for Robert, now would be the time to dial.
Wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Hold a throne, the gifts of nice bright colors.
To talk with Art Bell, Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
My guest is Robert Felix. His book is Not by Fire, but by Ice. You might want to read that book. And that really is suggestive of a very good question for tomorrow night. You know, we're going to be doing open lines tomorrow night. And I thought perhaps one question I would ask you all is, how do you think the world will end? You've had so many choices presented to you here on Coast to Coast AM about the way it might end. This being one of them, more or less. So that would make a hell of an open lines question, wouldn't it? How do you think the world will end? Why not? It's that kind of weekend. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Once again, my guest, Robert Felix, who basically, I think, would say the Earth would end, the world would end by volcanoes. Right?
Well, let me read something to you that's the very first part of my book and the way I came up with the name for the book.
Yeah.
A long time ago, the universe was made of ice. This is an ancient Scandinavian legend.
Hmm.
Then one day, the ice began to melt and a mist rose into the sky. Out of the mist came a giant made of frost, and the earth and the heavens were made from his body. That is how the world began, and that is how the world will end, not by fire, but by ice. The seas will freeze, and winters will never end. That's the ancient, you know, and when you think about it, you think back to Noah's flood, or you think forward to one, but what was happening in the north during Noah's flood? It had to have been snowing.
That's a good question.
Like crazy.
I suppose, yes, where it was colder. Noah's rain was indeed, obviously, snow.
It would have had to have been. And so that's the Scandinavian legend, is that's how they would say that it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's dip into the greater gene pool out there and see what they have for you, Robert.
Very good.
So we'll begin with line one. You're on the air with Robert Felix. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I am acutely aware of the changes because 27 years ago I fell into a deep coma and I was out of contact with the world for many years, and I came out of it just a few days before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's just unbelievable how the climate has changed and the weather patterns. It's just it's so unbelievable, and yet the people in the this day and age are not alarmed.
How long were you in this coma?
About 24 years.
You were in a coma for 24 years?
Yeah.
That would be something. I mean, to come out and to look at the world after that long of end, what put you in such a coma?
Well, they told me when I came out of the coma that it was a drug interaction that occurred 27 years ago,
uh-huh.
And it fried my brain, and I was taking too many prescription drugs, and it fried my brain, and it put me in the coma 27 years ago, and I didn't come out of it until just a few days before 9/11, and it's just unbelievable to me how the world has changed, and the weather patterns, and yet the people in this day and age are not alarmed. I mean,
Well, that's for the very same reason that a lobster is not alarmed when you put him in the water and you begin to turn on the heat. Lobster's not alarmed. Actually, for at least a few seconds from the lobster's point of view, I'm sure the water gets very pleasantly warm. Actually. Right, Robert?
I don't want to find out, but yes, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Same with frogs.
Lobster doesn't know what's happening to him till it's too late. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. You're up. Batter up. Yes, you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks, Art, for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Robert, I had a couple questions for you regarding the Ice Age. You had talked about how soon it would start, or kind of guessed around about it. How long do Ice Ages last? And second question is, what happens to the oceans? Are they going to rise or decrease? Should you buy that land property that's under the water right now?
Those are both very good questions.
All right.
The ice ages, previous ice ages, have lasted for about 5,000 years. The ice starts to build up and build up and build up, but by the end of 5,000 years, it's essentially back to normal again. And then at that 11,500-year period, back it comes. As to what happens to the oceans,
yes.
During the last ice age, sea levels were 370 feet lower than they are today. That's where the water comes from that builds up all that ice. And for an example, the Bering Strait, which I think is about 170 feet deep at its deepest point right now, that was above water. And so there was a giant land bridge that connected Asia to Alaska.
So you are saying that suddenly, if there were to be a repeat, that the ocean levels could be 300 feet or more lower than they are right now.
Absolutely.
Which would expose new land all over the place.
During the last ice age, the east coast of the United States was 100 miles further east than it is now. Most of those states would have been twice as big as they are now. So, that has happened every time. And by the way, there is evidence that sea levels are declining right now. We hear about rising sea levels, but there's evidence that they're declining.
Well, this doesn't seem like it would be a disputed measurement.
No, it doesn't. We hear anecdotal stories about sea levels rising, but in the country of Tuvalu, which is a country out in the Pacific Ocean, it's comprised of 9 small islands.
Yeah.
The highest point on any one of those islands is 12 feet above sea level.
Right.
So back in the early 1990s, Tuvalu was worried about rising sea levels and the fact that they could be inundated.
But actually, Robert, there were some islands that had to evacuate, right?
Well, because of storm surges, yes. But in Tuvalu, they assigned the job to the official meteorological agency of Tuvalu to measure sea levels. And during the next 10 years, sea levels declined by 2.5 inches. That is a huge decline,
mm-hmm.
but we're not hearing about it. That was published in...
No, here is another case of we're not hearing about
no,
it.
We're
I,
not.
Mean, I mean, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, because I don't understand how these measurements could be beyond dispute. I mean, either the ocean levels are rising or they're falling.
Right.
It's got to be one or the other.
The stories that you see in the newspaper talk about what the computer models say would happen if the ocean levels rose.
And you're saying that in reality, the opposite is occurring, though.
In reality, the opposite has been occurring.
But that should be gigantic, important news.
It should be.
And Robert is the only guy telling me this.
Mm-hmm. That was published in the United Kingdom in the year 2002. And sea levels were also, they found the same thing in the Solomon Islands. And in Nauru, and I'm not even sure where Nauru is. But
just seems to argue so hard with conventional wisdom science.
It does. Well, I think that some of the conventional wisdom is not science. I think it's something else.
Okay, yeah, I guess I've got that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Tish Ganser calling.
Welcome.
And I live in the Great Lakes State. And we love Lake Michigan. And first of all, Art, it's just an honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just love the pace of the program. And Robert, boy, I just love listening to you. You are so unpretentious, and I like your non-alarmist approach. And you just have such a depth of knowledge. I mean, what a neat interaction between you and Art tonight. Art, you just keep asking the neat questions, and Robert coming back. I'm just... thoroughly.
Okay, do you have it? Do you have a neat question?
I want to keep her on the air all night, Art.
What'd you say?
I said, well, he said he wanted to keep you around all night.
I don't want to keep going too long.
And I said,
but
I
have learned so much from this, and I have a question. Our lakes, all the lakes we enjoy here in Michigan, all our little lakes, were they the result from the last ice age? And as far as I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer, and Art, as far as your question, will the world end in fire or ice? I don't think the world's going to end. I think
I said my question was more overall. How do you think the world will end?
How do I think the world will end?
Yes.
I don't think it's going to end. I think we're going to end up with a better heaven and a better earth.
All right. Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the question. And all right, her precious Great Lakes, Robert. Were they the product of the last ice age? And or, she doesn't like the alarmist point of view, how will the Great Lakes fare in the next and or coming ice age that you're talking about?
You know, I can't answer that one. I know that some of the lakes in the Seattle area were certainly caused by, because that's the area that I live. I know that some of those were definitely carved by glaciers as they receded and advanced.
So you cannot tell her if her lakes were made by the last
ice age? No, I don't know the answer.
All right. How would they fare during the one that you're talking about?
I would have to look on my maps, but a lot of that area was covered. Was covered with ice. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But not all of it. So it depends on which part of the state she's in as to
That's
what happened.
Very interesting. All right, got it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Felix.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I'm Dennis from Palm Springs.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Dennis.
Great movie I saw tonight.
Oh, thank you.
It's kind of alarming, but I'm with you guys 100%. I'm a longtime listener. And I just wanted to know if the scenario you're talking about, does that have to do solely with Yellowstone blowing up, or and if Yellowstone blows up, am I safe in Palm Springs, or should because the United States is...
All right, well, hold it. Wait for your answer. Let's see.
Okay.
No. The larger picture on the Ice Age, does it have to do with it, Robert?
No, Yellowstone doesn't. Yellowstone has not had a major eruption in 640,000 years.
So these are very different discussions. One about the cyclical ice age, and the other about Yellowstone what might be happening.
So if Yellowstone, but without Yellowstone, we will still have an ice age because that's part of the natural cycle. As far as I know, Palm Springs should be fine. During the last ice age, the American Southwest was slightly wetter than it is now, so maybe you'd have a little more rain, and it might be 2 degrees cooler. It should be wonderful.
Yeah, but one more quickie. If Yellowstone does go off, are you saying that there's no place on the planet that's safe to go would be going?
Well, let's see. There would be a 20-degree drop globally, which would have... Now, you're going to get into some very interesting consequences here when you begin talking about a 20-degree drop of temperature. Robert, what would that bring with it?
Well, the main thing it's going to bring with it is the lack of food. And again, this is a big if, but if Yellowstone goes off and you've got 7 feet of ash, you've got all of that ash landing on the rivers, and then when it rains, all of that ash is going into the rivers and washing into the seas.
Right.
It would essentially, you'd be looking at massive extinctions in the seas with all of that ash.
And I guess massive extinctions on Earth, period.
Yeah, it would be an extinction event. But I would still think that Palm Springs, and any of those places, I'm thinking for a normal ice age, going as far south only as Oregon would be,
a big difference. It's the best time I've ever had, Robert. In the movie The Day After Tomorrow, this area would be, relatively okay. And I'm not giving away too much here.
Yes.
And usually my city, just over the hill here, Las Vegas, it's destroyed right off the bat. But lately there's been better news for the American Southwest, and I'm very grateful for that fact.
Yeah, I think the American Southwest will be fine. I think any place south of North Carolina should be fine. So there's a lot of places. During the last ice ages, the tropics were only about 4 degrees colder than right now. So there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of places.
Yes, but of course, with the Yellowstone occurrence, we're talking about a far different event, very far different event.
You know, I hate to even talk about that because that's hard to even comprehend.
Well, and yet you felt obviously compelled to discuss it to some degree tonight, and that's why I kind of probed you and said, look, how serious is the latest news about Yellowstone? You're saying 5 on a scale of 10, maybe.
I think so, because of all of the earthquakes and all of the things that are indeed going on.
All right. International Line, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
Art and Robert, it's Brent calling from Winnipeg. We're doing a bit of a coast-to-coast party here with me and my buddy Norm.
Okay, ask Norm to turn the radio off.
Yeah, Norm, turn the radio off.
Thanks, Norm.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. Just a question that has to do with this whole ice age and with the volcanic eruptions and what have you. I've been listening to your program for some time in terms of this Planet X thing coming through and what's
Do you also, sir, see the similarity of not just Planet X, but I mean what the Hopi say, what so many others on this program have said about roughly the same timeline?
Very, very much so. This 3,600-year thing, if it's on a rotational orbit and it's coming within 20 million miles of Earth, and if we do buy into the idea of it being about 2 to 3 to 5 times the size of the Earth, you look at what the moon does, just in terms of the pull on the tides. If we have a planetary body coming within that distance of the Earth, it's got to be doing like a sucking effect on the volcano, on the volcanic activity of the Earth, where we're looking at teutonic shifts.
You're referring to the magnetic influence of another body that close to Earth.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and coming in with meteors and comets and all the other things that are tied into its gravitational pull. We're looking at meteors and comets and everything. We're looking at planets that we haven't ever seen before. Put all that together and say, okay, what your theory, Robert, is that the whole thing is volcanic. What I'm suggesting is that the volcanic may be attributable to an extraplanetary force working its way, coming closer and closer to
the
Earth.
All right. That's a wonderful question, Robert. Right. So if there were something cyclical like a Planet X, mm-hmm. Couldn't this caller be right that the eruptions that you're talking about could be the effect of some oncoming magnetic field change produced by some other planetary body? In other words, everything you've talked about, couldn't that be attributable to some other major event or attendant to that event?
If there is such a thing as Planet X, yes, I think it could. And you mentioned the magnetics, because magnetic reversals do occur to the same beat.
There you are. Magnetic reversals. They're talking about the same sort of timelines.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes. We had the a magnetic reversal or excursion, where the magnetic North Pole
wanders
south and then popped back up again.
Yes.
We had the Gothenburg magnetic reversal 11,500 years ago. We had the Mono Lake magnetic reversal 23,000 years ago. We had the Lake Mungo magnetic reversal 33,500 years ago. That's when the Neanderthals went extinct. All of these things are right on that same cycle. I haven't studied the Planet X thing. I don't know whether it's true or not, but if it is, then it...
I'm with you. I don't know if it's true either, but, you know, there's Sitchin and there's a lot of things to think about. And when you start putting together all of these things that are on this same rough cycle, mm-hmm. no matter which one it ends up being, you've got to get the shivers a little bit. They're world-ending events, and they're all on the same damn cycle. That's got to have some significant very significant meaning. So that's why I thought maybe a good question would be, how do you think the world's going to end? I mean, it could be any one of these events, right?
Sure.
You sound so cheerful.
Well, I've been studying this so long that sometimes I even doubt myself, but then I realize, no, it's coming. But what other choice do we have than to face it square on with it with a smile? I don't know.
Yeah, with a smile. That's right. And you've got a smile in your voice as you talk about it, Robert, so that's good. I mean, why not? What's going to happen is going to happen, right?
Well, if we can't do anything about it, we might as well,
enjoy it.
Enjoy it and enjoy life and do what is the best as we can.
Yeah, I that's as good a view as any in the face of this kind of discussion, right? Well, Maybe tomorrow night, one of the questions I will ask you is, how do you think the world will end? Certainly, there's been plenty of primer for it on this program. Make a dynamite question. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This has a very soothing effect, doesn't it, as we discuss matters like Yellowstone blowing its corks, 600 miles of pure death surrounding it, that sort of thing, a new ice age. My guest is Robert Felix, and we'll be right back. So if you would like to indulge tomorrow night's question, one of them anyway, how do you think the world is going to end, and you want to investigate the way Robert Felix thinks it might end, not by fire, but by ice, you can probably find his book at Yahoo, even though it's been out this long. Can you still get it up Amazon and those sorts of places, Robert?
Absolutely. It's available on Amazon. It's available at a lot of the other bookstores. If they don't have it, they can get it in about 3 days. Or it's available on my website.
By the time a person has fully digested your book, will there be enough evidence in there to convince them that this volcanic process is underway?
I think so. Naturally, I think so. But I've certainly heard from a lot of people who do agree with it, and I've gotten good endorsements from some solid scientists that agree with it. So, yes, I believe so.
Are you going to be investing in greenhouses?
I have certainly considered that. You know, and another thing, you know, I had, when I first came out with this book, I was really hot on the thought that, you know, everybody should move south. And I no longer say that. In 1999, I think it was, but anyway, I decided if I was going to believe my own words, that I had to move. And so I was renting a house at the time, and I let the house go, and I got a rider rental.
Where is it you live?
I'm in Seattle area.
You're in Seattle.
Yes.
My gracious.
Yeah,
then, according to your own words then, let's hear this.
Okay.
So how did you rationalize staying in Seattle?
Well, first what I did is I got the truck and I sold stuff and the rest I loaded into a truck and put my Jeep on a trailer and I headed off for Arizona.
Yes.
And I did, in fact, move to Arizona, and I got there, you know, and I realized my daughter lives back here, my granddaughter lives back here.
It was sort of an, oh, my God, what have I done?
What have I done?
Really?
And I came back, and now I realize that there's more to this than just plain science.
There was nothing about Arizona you didn't instantly dislike?
Oh, no. I had lived there previously, and I like Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I like it a lot, and I still go back and visit. But what I'm doing is I'm keeping track of what's going on in Nova Scotia and in New Brunswick, and because I'm.
So are you thinking there's going to be enough warning, so that you could beat feet and get out of the Seattle area?
I hope so, but I'll tell you, every time it snows, I wonder if I'm right. I do. I honestly do worry about it every time. It's because we have had record snows. 4 years ago, Mount Baker in northern Washington had 100 feet of snow in one season. I mean, mm-hmm. That's deeper than the trees.
Oh, yes.
It was the most snow in one season that's ever been recorded anywhere in the world.
So you think you'll have enough warning?
I hope so.
You don't sound that confident.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
So I guess the alternative would say be to say internally, embrace the ice and I'll die with my family and friends.
That's kind of the alternative.
I mean, you thought about that, right?
Yes. Yes, I have. And what good is the quality of life, you know, if you're in a place where there's no friends and no family and no anything? I decided that it was better to stay. So I used to tell people they should move. I no longer say that. It all depends on their own circumstances.
Fascinating. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hi.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Robert?
Yes.
I believe in everything that you're saying. I believe that you've got a good focus, and I believe there's a lot of things going on in our world right now that are affecting our condition as far as whether or not this earth is going to end within our lifetimes. And I personally believe it is, but that it's going to come by the hand of man, by intercontinental ballistic missiles fired upon the Antarctic, causing the melting of the ice down there.
Well, that would do it. I believe that would do it. Why do you believe that we would fire missiles intentionally, nuclear devices, at the Antarctic? Why would we do that, sir?
I'll lead into this real quick. I was in the bookstore years ago looking for The Quickening, your book, and I loved it.
Okay, I appreciate all that, but I want the answer to that. Why?
Well, I found Zachariah Sitchin's, and I read him, and that's when everything started to make sense. Well, the secret societies that are in control of our Earth right now, they have a time schedule, and they will circle the Earth just as the Anunnaki did in the previous flood after Utnapishtim was warned by Enki.
You think the New World Order people are going to fire missiles at the Antarctic and melt us?
And when they return to this earth, they'll be worshipped as gods.
Holy mackerel.
By what's left.
Well, that's a hell of a story and a hell of a way for the world to end. What do you think about that, Felix?
I think I'll stay away from that one, Art.
No, huh? Not going to tackle that one?
No.
Huh? Secret society blasting the Antarctic? Oh, my. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Robert Felix.
Yeah, hi. Art, Mr. Felix.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? You know, if this ice age were to happen, I haven't seen your film yet, Art, but I'm looking forward to trying to get to see it. But if this ice age were in fact to occur, and we did in fact have sufficient warning, I think there might be things that we could do to minimize some of the calamitous effects of it, and one of them might possibly be to construct an array of nuclear reactors on the moon and essentially hook them up to a mess of giant grow lights, as it were, and point them towards the Earth and maybe warm up the Earth a couple of degrees. Also, on that same note, the same sort of principle could be applied to
you would point,
Mars. You could put them on Deimos and Phobos.
No, wait a minute. Let's come back to putting grow lights on the moon.
Right.
Powered by the sun, right?
No, well, you could use solar electrics as well. But
you want to build nuclear power plants?
Be more efficient if you had nuclear power plants powering them.
And then focus all this light on the Earth.
Sure, why not?
In order, what do you mean, why not? In order,
it beats you know, getting into fights with people over firewood and sweaters and stuff, you know.
So control the, well, okay, you know what? An interesting question, Felix. With all that we've discussed tonight, these ancient cycles that we're talking about, can we do anything at all about them? Can we control their occurrence or lack of occurrence? Do we have the slightest possibility of affecting this in any way whatsoever?
I don't think we have the slightest possibility of affecting it one way or the other whatsoever. No. We can.
What about grow lights on the moon?
You know what? It's going to take that kind of thinking out of the box, to think of things that we can do.
Yes.
It really is.
Grow lights on the moon. I'll remember that one for a while. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hi.
Hello. It's good to hear, to talk to you, Art, and thank you very much for the Coast to Coast.
You're very welcome.
Having a show like this is really splendid, because once people discover what could happen to the planet, it's good to be prepared with distributing the information.
Just wait till we ask tomorrow night how you think the world will end.
Yeah. One of the concerns that I have is that with foreknowledge of what might happen and happening within our lifetime, we might be facing solutions we have to create now, and that would be alternative community building. I was wondering if that has been one of the factors that
you mean like sealed addressed. Yeah, you mean like sealed bubble cities. That
well, we frequently talked about how it'll affect people personally, but not how we can create communities that can counterpose against an ice age.
Got it. All right. So bubble cities, that kind of thing, Robert. Would you go to that scale? Do you think that mankind, if, you know, presented with a catastrophe of a 20-degree change or something like that, those who remained would erect bubble cities and protect themselves from the environment?
No, I would guess that when it does come, I would say that people will start moving south. That's what has happened in the past. You know, Genghis Khan swept out of the north in sync with a little ice age cycle, and I think we'll be seeing mass migration of people moving south.
So what will the northern nations do? Will Canada and the United States go down and simply, I don't know,
well, I think
annex a few nations in the southern hemisphere and say, look, we're stronger, we're going to survive, sorry, we're taking Brazil?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we'd have to go that far. You know, I think that, you know, I've mentioned that I live in the Seattle area, and it wouldn't surprise me, you know, when this comes, is that people be moving south, is that, like, the state of California will close their borders. I think there will be things like that where they won't, they'll be fighting just about trying to migrate south. but the bubble cities, I don't know that we would have the will to do that, and I don't know that we would have, once we finally admit that this thing has started, I think it will be too late to do that sort of thing.
All righty. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hello. I think we just missed somebody. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hello. I'm not pushing the button. That's my fault. Wildcard line, I think you're on the air now with Robert Felix. Hello.
Wow, I really like the idea of the grow lights on the moon.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I was wondering if I don't know if you're familiar with Earthship style housing.
I am.
Yes.
I was wondering if Robert knew about that kind of housing, if it was, say, in the southern Rockies, like down in the Four Corners area. Do you think that would survive that sort of a catastrophe?
Well, I would think that the Southwest being relatively okay, at least perhaps so, with what Robert has said, that kind of housing might be very efficient, right?
I do. I have a friend who's getting ready to build an Earthship house in Taos.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, I think that, because they're so self-sufficient, I think that would be a great idea.
I wonder if it'll hum. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Felix. Hello.
How's it going, Mr. Bell?
It's going pretty well, thank you.
I'm calling you from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm listening here on WHAS.
Big one, yes.
I was just going to say that in my short lifetime, I'm 31, I've seen both extremes of weather here in Kentucky, which would just support pretty much, you know, the radical change of weather. In 94 or 5, we had a 22 below, the lowest ever recorded here. And then in 99, in a very hot summer, we had 104. And then the floods that he talked about earlier, they said it was like a 100-year type thing. And then
I
like
know.
2 years later, we had the same kind of rain again.
I know. It's been incredible.
I've seen both extremes. And I kind of think that we live in an area south of the north of the equator where we get, you know, equal, like when you put the balance right between left and right, of the cold and the hot. And yet, these are extremes for us.
Mm-hmm.
The big weather we had in 94, we had a terrible big winter storm.
Man, we can just go on and on describing the record weather, no joke. And no joke what's going on across the whole middle part of the country so far this year. It's been incredibly violent, incredibly violent. In fact, earlier tonight, I switched the radio on, and there was so much static on the radio that it was just like a lost cause. I mean, lightning strikes by the gazillions, and I looked at the lightning map, and the whole north-central part of the United States is on fire with large-cell thunderstorms, really serious weather. But you know something, Robert? We're not supposed to, as mortals, we're not supposed to really notice any weather cycles at all. The traditional teaching is, in America and around the world, that these events take place over much larger spans than we would ever notice anything occurring at all. It's ridiculous. Thousands and thousands of years. That's the traditional teaching, right, Robert?
That is the traditional teaching, and it is totally wrong. These ice ages begin. There was an ice age, one of the ones that I could talk about is at the end Eemian. The Eemian was a period of warmth that lasted about 11,500 years that was very similar today, slightly warmer than today. And that ended 115,000 years ago, and it ended in less than 10 years. The climate went from temperatures warmer than today to full-fledged glacial severity in less than 10 years.
Then just look what happened to our school textbooks. I mean, what happened? How come? And I mean, it has not changed. The school textbooks still say the same thing, right?
They still say the same thing, and it's, I don't know why. I don't, the cycle that I talk about, why isn't that in any computer models? I know of no geologist in the world who will disavow this cycle. It's called the Milankovitch cycle. It's written in the rocks. It's written in the earth record. It's not denied. If the computer modelers would put this cycle into their computer models, mm-hmm. I think your movie talks about some ancient paleoclimate computer models, but if this would be put into those models, it would be a totally different story.
And that makes me so much want to talk about some of the plot of the movie, but,
yes.
But you're exactly right, of course.
That was a great movie.
It was. Thank you. Robert, we've come to the end of it here. The show is just about over. Is there anything that we somehow didn't get out during the course of the show that you'd like to get in at the very end? Did we, you know, skip over anything?
No, I would just say that remember, the whole world will not be covered by ice, and we don't have to panic in that way. If we can have some food, and if we can be prepared to move south if we have to. But I am not suggesting that people move south at this time.
It is interesting to me, Robert, that you adjusted your own life based on what you wrote and how you went into that psychological turnaround on, wait a minute now, what have I just done? That was stupid. I'm going home.
Yeah, and it, you know, I won't label it as stupid, but I learned better. And until that point, I really hadn't considered that part. I was just looking at the pure science.
I do need to know, how long had you been in Arizona when, boom, the light bulb went off?
One day.
One day?
One day.
One day?
One day. I felt, yeah, I did feel stupid.
One day in Arizona?
One day.
That's incredible. Well, it's obvious that you really feel what you write about, and that you're certainly a believer in your own take on science.
I am totally a believer. And, you know, this has been since 1991, and I'm more convinced now than ever.
Uh-huh. Well, if we could just... I don't know who you appeal to. NASA, perhaps. I mean, NASA does large-scale climate studies. Could you appeal to NASA to take these things into account? They influence a lot of the computer models.
A big one that I'm appealing to is, it would be so simple during the next El Nino,
yes,
to take a submersible down and look at the source of the heat. Where is the heat coming that causes El Nino?
Go find the source of
all
the heat.
All they got to do, that's all it takes, is follow that heat to its source, and we'll know whether I'm right or wrong.
All right, brother. Thank you for being on the program tonight. Continued success with your book, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Art, thank you. I sir appreciate it.
Good night. Robert Felix, ladies and gentlemen, not by fire, but by ice. From the high desert. Oh, don't forget, tomorrow night we're going to be asking you how you think the world will end. From the high desert, good night.
How high will gas prices?